Bottom of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. We say adios to Dave Manuk, who's off to cover the Manitoba Moose game for IllegalCurve.com, so you can check out our website for a full recap. While you're at it, you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, as I mentioned, our Facebook page, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and all your Jets and Moose news and audio is available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program from USA Today, Jimmy Haskup joins us to talk about the NHL trade deadline, look around the league in its entirety. Jimmy, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
How's it going, guys? Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Jimmy. How are you doing? Are you getting ready for what should be a busy 48 hours in the world of the NHL?
Totally, but I must say, I don't think Germany has any chance against Russia in that gold medal game.
You know, I tend to agree with you, but, you know, I guess stranger things have happened. We have seen some miracles on ice before. Nobody would have said that the U.S. was going to win curling, but curling is now all the rage down south. So, you know, stranger things have happened, right?
Totally, totally. We're calling it the mirror curl on ice in the U.S.
I like that.
You know, speaking of the Olympic athletes from Russia, Jimmy, Ilya Kovalchuk has obviously been phenomenal for Russia or the Olympic athletes from Russia at these Olympics. What would you say the chances are that we see Kovalchuk back in the NHL?
I think they're pretty high, actually. I mean, obviously, he's proven in this tournament that he still has the shot. He still has some speed. He can score. He can get to the net. I think there are always teams looking for scoring. There's been rumors this year that he would return next year around the New York metro area. I mean, like, the Rangers have been linked, but I don't know how big of an interest they'll have with where they're at now and kind of like a rebuild mode. But I definitely could see him back in the NHL, maybe on a few-year deal. I mean, he could still score, so why not?
Jimmy Haskup is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day, the Jets and the Stars later on tonight from Texas. Jimmy, obviously the hockey world was sort of a buzz about the acquisition by the Pittsburgh Penguins of Derek Brassard from the Ottawa Senators. And you know, we know that the Penguins had been in the market for a third line center, and they go out and they get Brassard. It's as interesting as that is the way they facilitated the trade, or the way the Vegas Golden Knights swooped in to help them to prevent Brassard from coming to the Western Conference might be even more important than the trade itself. It's sort of a bizarre scenario where the Golden Knights are using their cap space as the asset that it is. Your thoughts on the Golden Knights really throwing a bone to what could be the Eastern Conference's Stanley Cup representative?
I mean, you could look at it and say maybe that could be one of the underlying big moves of the trade deadline, right? I mean, with the way Golden Knights might not make a big addition personnel-wise, but they clearly think they've been a contender really all year, despite many of us, me included, not being sure how they would look this year. But you see what they did there. I think I saw reported, I think it was John Shannon, who said he was told they would rather face Brassard in round four than round two in the West. Mm-hmm. So maybe the Knights don't add anyone of note on their roster the rest of the way, but they make a move like that, and then it ends up paying off for them.
Jimmy, today for USA Today, you had a piece on five teams to keep an eye on prior to the NHL trade deadline. The Ottawa Senators, as we just talked about, are obviously one of those teams. What do you think the chances are that Erik Karlsson is traded, or do you think it happens maybe prior to the draft, or maybe it happens next year?
I'm a little conflicted on that one. I would say high, because I think a lot of these GMs value two runs with him. I mean, he's not an expiring contract. He's an absolute game changer, and he's a right-handed defenseman. I mean, he does everything you want him. He's like one of the best defensemen in the game. But I just think the complication there is just trying to get the money to work, trying to get the pieces to work. And with reports suggesting that maybe they want to include Bobby Ryan in a deal, I don't see that as being the best idea for them, because if they really want to maximize their return, they should just really be looking at moving Karlsson on his own. But I don't see, I mean, you look at the Lightning. Why wouldn't they imagine them with Karlsson, Hedman on the first pair? I mean, could anyone beat that? You know, I just think it seems to be gaining steam here in the past few days. So why not? It'll make for a fun day if it does happen.
If you're Steve Yzerman, do you consider moving Mikhail Sergachev, considering he's been so good this year?
Absolutely not. I wouldn't really want to do that if I were him either. And I think that's why a lot of the reports are suggesting that they would rather move picks or prospects and not really dismantle any piece or any major part of their lineup, because if the team has been winning, why do you want to, like, disrupt what's going on there? So that's why I think it's a little complicated for them. And that's maybe why maybe like a Mike Green fits better for them, because they can trade a high pick and then they can throw in a prospect, and that works for Detroit.
Jimmy Haskup, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jimmy covers the NHL for USA Today. Jimmy, sticking with the Ottawa Senators, if Erik Karlsson gets traded, and the if is attached there because we're not sure how that's going to play out over the next 48 hours, and you've heard that Mike Hoffman's name is linked to trades and that they're really looking to clean house in Ottawa, why don't they also trade Matt Duchene? I mean, what are the odds that Matt Duchene is going to re-sign in Ottawa if they're trading away all the key components that are around the around him, given that he's UFA after next season, just like Karlsson is?
That's a good question. I just think you look at it, they're going to have to try to sell tickets somehow, right, despite the interesting ownership situation there. I mean, I'm with you. I don't know why that you wouldn't. I mean, I think they kind of misread that whole trade there and getting him and sending Turris out. I mean, but you got to keep something. But, I agree with you. Why not dangle him and see what you can get? Teams are always looking to strengthen down the middle, especially in the playoffs. And if you're going to be trading Karlsson, if you're going to be tearing this thing down, what is Matt Duchene really going to do for you next year if you want to start fresh?
Now, Jimmy, when you talk about the Chicago Blackhawks, we know they're not going to make the playoffs this year, and they have some players that have been linked to trades. Brandon Saad is one player. As far as the Chicago Blackhawks go, is there a team that's in a worse position than the Blackhawks right now?
That's a good question. I would say they're in among the worst. I mean, I just look at some of the contracts they have. I mean, you can't really blame them for giving Toews and Kane what they got. But then the Saad deal, I didn't like from the beginning because Panarin put the puck in the net more than Saad does. And you just look at where they are on defense. Brent Seabrook, that contract is long term and not very good. And you see how important Corey Crawford really is to them. And you look at the roster, they don't really have. I mean, obviously there are a few high-end guys, like the Brincats had a great year, but there's not a lot of those really young pieces you're going to be building in around, and that's why it's going to make Bowman's job pretty tough here. But he might, you know, I wouldn't expect a lot of these things to happen now, but that might be, you know, there might be a big move or two in the offseason for them.
Jimmy Haskup is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jimmy covers the NHL for USA Today. This is part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN 1290. Jimmy, the Nashville Predators have been doing battle with the Jets all season long for top spot in the Central Division. The Predators certainly considered one of the favorites to be in the Stanley Cup Finals, or maybe even hoist Lord Stanley's Grail at the end of the season. Do the Predators need to make an addition, you know, in the trade market, or will the addition of Eli Tolvanen, as most people expect he's going to come over after the Olympics, is Eli Tolvanen a big enough addition to the Predators roster come at the end of the trade deadline?
I do not think they need to make a move, but you can never count out David Poile, and I think it's going to be hard as much upside that he has, that prospect. I mean, are you really going to rely on him in the playoffs? I mean, despite no matter his talent level, it's just very hard for me to see, like, Laviolette, especially down here to the playoff push and in the playoffs, letting him play big minutes. I mean, NHL coaches don't like doing that. That's why I could see them. There are so many wingers available that Poile could take advantage of, you know, waiting to the last minute and seeing who else is available pending, you know, unrestricted free agent, and just get one of those guys to kind of firm up their, you know, top nine winger position.
Jimmy, your colleague Kevin Allen had a really interesting article up on USA Today a couple of days ago talking about how the U.S. hockey team could look if the NHL goes to the 2022 Winter Olympics in China. I realize that those Olympics are 4 years away, but in your opinion, does the NHL have to go in 22?
Absolutely. I mean, this tournament was fun, but you could definitely see the talent difference without the NHL players there, right? I mean, you look at that U.S. team when they had a 4-on-3 power play in the overtime of their last game, and it was like they could barely get a shot on net. I mean, so from a league perspective, I kind of see why they didn't go this year, and I kind of see why like they're reticent to let their players go because, you know, it disrupts the season. But from a selfish, from a fan perspective, from a reporter's perspective, I mean, I think you have to let them. You have to let them go, just because. I mean, I think the talent difference. You could clearly see it in these games. That's why I think Russia is just totally the favorite tonight.
Jimmy, we'll let you go on this last question. If you look at the battle for the final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference, it looks like it's going to come down to one of Columbus, the Islanders, and Carolina. From your perspective, which of those three teams is the favorite to earn the final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference? And does, if they get in, do they have a chance against the Tampa Bay Lightning, or are they just going to be first-round fodder for the Lightning?
I think... as you see it now, is what it will be once the playoffs start. I think Columbus will get in, even though they haven't looked that great. The Islanders don't defend well enough. They don't keep the puck out of the net well enough. And the Carolina, I just don't believe in their goaltending. And I do not think, I mean, Columbus has pieces. You look at it and you wonder why they aren't better. And they played better last year than they have been now. But like you said, I don't see them having a chance against Tampa Bay in the first round. It will be a pretty easy series, I would say, for the Lightning.
Jimmy Haskup covers the NHL for USA Today. Jimmy, always appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
When we come back, we're going to talk about the Central Division. We'll shift our focus to our trade deadline preview. That's from now through the end of the broadcast. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Rick Nash made headlines early this week when we learned that he put Toronto on his list of teams that he'd be willing to be dealt to. That said, where do you figure he's most likely to end up?
Well, Gino, my money is on the Nashville Predators. Just go back and take a look at some of the deals that GM David Poile has pulled off over the last couple years. Ryan Johansson, PK Subban, this year Kyle Turris. He's landed some of the biggest fish, and now he knows his team getting to the Stanley Cup final last year, how close they are. He's not going to stop at any length to try and push this team over the top and bring a Stanley Cup to Nashville for the first time. We saw what that party was like last year on Lower Broadway. They want to live all of that again, and trust me, players around the league were noticing too. The Nashville Predators are on Rick Nash's list. They're another team that he could certainly see himself with for a playoff run.
Gino Retta and Frank Saravelli discussing the possibility of New York Rangers winger Rick Nash ending up in Nashville. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Santa Lucia Pizza. Winnipeg Jets game day. We're going to talk about the Central Division, preview the Central Division ahead of Monday's NHL trade deadline. This segment of the show is brought to you, of course, by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. If you're looking for a place to catch tonight's game, Bernstein's Deli's got you covered. Great food and drink specials. They got the game on the big screen TVs. You can check it out. It's hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's. Bernstein's Deli in the Cordon Village Mall.
Someone on Twitter, Drew, wants us to deliver an Illegal Curve sandwich to them.
Is that somebody, Jason Bell, as we talked about in the first hour?
No, it was someone else. I'm considering it. I want the world to experience the Illegal Curve sandwich. So if that means that, you know, I'm buying, then that's fine.
You're a very generous young man. It really is remarkable just how generous you are, Mr. Ginsburg. Let's talk about the Central Division. You know, Nashville Predators were being discussed there as part of a potential landing spot for Rick Nash.
By the way, the guy was Boltman 2323.
Good old Boltman.
Kevin.
Kevin the Boltman.
Yep.
Does he sell bolts?
I don't know if he's related to Usain Bolt.
Do you think he sells bolts?
I don't know.
Oh, interesting.
I hope that he hasn't been hit by a lightning bolt.
That would be bad if anybody's ever been hit by a lightning bolt. It's true. The Predators, they're currently first in the Central Division. They are the defending Western Conference champions. To me, they're the best team in the Western Western Conference. All due respect to the Winnipeg Jets, of course. But
I think they're the best team in the league.
Do you think they're the best team in the league?
I do.
Okay, then let's talk about that. Do they need to add to their roster ahead of Monday's trade deadline? Does Rick Nash or another player like Rick Nash make sense to you to go to the Nashville Predators? You know, I can easily see that we're looking at potentially a Pittsburgh-Nashville rematch. Do the Predators need to add to their roster ahead of Monday's trade deadline?
You know, Drew, last hour you mentioned Mike Hoffman. I think Mike Hoffman makes more sense on the Nashville Predators than Rick Nash does, because Mike Hoffman has term on his contract.
Sure.
Right? Rick Nash is a pending UFA. We've heard that Rick Nash might be traded, and then he might sign and go back to New York.
Yes, we have.
That's not, you know, out of the realm of possibility. So do the Nashville Predators need to make a trade? I don't know if they need to make a trade. I think they are going to make a trade, and it could be Rick Nash. It could be Mike Hoffman. It could be someone else. But, I mean, you look at what they've done up the middle when they brought in Kyle Turris, and now your top three centers are Ryan Johansson, Kyle Turris, Nick Bonino. Cali Yarncroke is another guy that can play center or wing. He's moved to the wing. Colton Sissons right now is your fourth-line center.
Mike
and
Fisher, supposedly.
There you go. That was the guy I was going to mention, Drew. You know, Mike Fisher, I think he slots in probably as the fourth-line center.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you have a guy like Scott Hartnell who's been playing on the third line. Maybe he bumps down. And then your fourth line is Mike Fisher, Scott Hartnell, and maybe Austin Watson. You know, I mean, this team is so deep. I agree, you know, with the exception, you know, of maybe the Winnipeg Jets and the Vegas Golden Knights. I don't think anybody else is in this conversation right now as far as top teams in the Western Conference. And as I mentioned, I mean, you talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning. Nashville's defense is better than the Tampa Bay Lightning's defense as far as I'm concerned. And I realize Andrei Vasilevskiy is having a Vezina-quality season, but Pekka Rinne has been pretty darn good as well. So could they use Mike Hoffman? Absolutely they could. But, you know, I look at, you know, players like Kevin Fiala, who's having a good year this year. This is his second year in the NHL. Victor Arvidsson.
He got injured in the playoffs, of course, last year.
Right.
Fiala did.
And
did Johansson.
Right, and he's healthy now. But Arvidsson, you know, had his career last year. He's having another good year. I mentioned Cali Yarn. He's a guy that I really like. If you remember, he came over in the David Legwand trade from the Detroit Red Wings. So, I mean, up and down this roster, they're solid up the middle. They're solid on the wings. We talked about, you know, Scott Hartnell. Mika Salamaki is another guy I didn't even mention. I mean, you go up and down this roster, there's tons of skill. There's tons of grit. We know how good this group of defensemen is, led by Roman Josi, Ryan Ellis, Matthias Ekholm, PK Subban. I mean, even the third pair there, you know, you've got Matt Irwin and Yannick Weber. Alex Emelin, by the way, is also, you know, in the Nashville's top seven. So, I mean, best group of defensemen in the league as far as I'm concerned. And you got tons of depth up the middle and on the wing. So if you throw in Mike Hoffman, I think Nashville just gets even better. And that's really what they're doing here, Drew. I mean, they're gearing up for a Stanley Cup final rematch with the Pittsburgh Penguins. I think there's a good chance you'll see that rematch this year.
Yeah, I think you probably will see that rematch right now. I think the Penguins, their addition of Brassard, puts them over the top in the East, potentially against the Tampa Bay Lightning or the Boston Bruins, mind you. The thing about Hoffman, just for the record, about Hoffman and the salary cap and everything else in Nashville. One, they have the cap space for this year.
Yep.
Estimated to have about $14 million of cap space. $14.8 million of cap space the Predators are estimated to have at the trade deadline. And then next year, they still have the cap space to keep Hoffman on their roster. They only have a couple UFAs pending next year. Alexei Yemelin, who of course is now a depth defenseman for the team, and Scott Hartnell, who's only making $1 million. So the cap space won't be an issue if the Predators were to go out and add a guy like Hoffman. Another interesting note about Hoffman, as you know, I didn't get to mention in the first hour, Elliot Friedman in his 31 Thoughts mentioned that the Jets were interested in Mike Hoffman, so he has a no-move clause and a no-trade clause. The Senators asked him if he'd be willing to waive it to come to Winnipeg. Apparently, Winnipeg is on the list of teams that he doesn't want to go to. He said, no, I'm not willing to entertain that option. So the Jets were interested in Hoffman, allegedly, but he refused to waive his no move, no trade to consider coming to Winnipeg.
Right, and I realize, you know, we talked about Winnipeg during the first hour, but my question is, where does Mike Hoffman fit in right now? Because you've got Nikolai Ehlers and Patrick Laine as the wingers on your third line, and you've got Jack Roslovic and Matthew Perreault as your wingers on the second line. They're not bringing Mike Hoffman in to play on the fourth line.
I think the only way it makes sense, you know, for the Jets to be bringing in a winger is if you're planning to move Perreault or Roslovic up the middle on your third line. That's the only way it makes sense, because right now they're loaded up on the wings, and the only real sort of glaring spot for the Jets is that third-line center. I want to touch on this. I know we're supposed to be talking about the entire Central Division, but there's been a lot of chatter on Twitter today going back and forth, Ezzy, about Thomas Plekanec potentially being available from the Montreal Canadiens. The Jets obviously striking out on getting Derek Brassard, but Plekanec is a name that's been bandied about. From my perspective, and I think you sort of agree with me on this one, is you're not sure that Plekanec is a huge upgrade over Andrew Kopp.
Well, I also just don't think he's that good anymore. He's 35 years old now, and I'm 35 years old, and I would think that I have a lot to give as well. But, I mean, Plekanec isn't the same player that he was 3, 4, 5 years ago. He's a great two-way center, and he spent his entire career with the Montreal Canadiens, but he's got 6 goals in 60 games. I don't know how much offense he's providing. Mm. And, you know, people talk about, you know, the two-way game. Doesn't Andrew Kopp provide that? Doesn't Adam Lowry provide that? And again, you know, I'm not saying, you know, that Thomas Plekanec's a bad player. I think he's had a great NHL career at the international level as well, but I just don't know how much of an upgrade it is, right? So the question becomes, Drew, what are you giving up to get an aging, pending UFA? What are you giving up, a third-round pick?
It's a valuable question that you ask there, Ezzy, and I think it's a reasonable one. I think somebody would say they want him just for the depth of adding another center, not necessarily that he's going to replace Andrew Kopp, but adding more depth.
But that bumps someone out, right? If you pick up Plekanec and then Lowry's in the lineup, that means you're bumping Matt Hendricks out of the lineup. I actually think Matt Hendricks has done a great job. Does he play every single playoff game for the Jets? Maybe it's like last year in Edmonton, and you know Matt Hendricks gets bumped out a little bit, but I just don't know if Plekanec is an upgrade over either Kopp or Lowry, and we'll see what happens. I understand a lot of Jets fans out there are disappointed that the Jets didn't get Brassard. Mm-hmm. I get it, and now Plekanec is one of those guys that I think Jets fans are pushing for, but you know, don't get disappointed if the Jets don't get him, because I just don't know if he's a fit.
Let's talk about the Dallas Stars, the Minnesota Wild, and the St. Louis Blues. The Stars have the most cap space of those three teams on deadline day, estimated to have a little more than $4 million available. The Minnesota Wild only have $623,000, so they have to do pretty much a money-in, money-out exchange, and the Blues only have $1.14 million, so they're also expected to have a money-in, money-out transaction if they do anything ahead of the trade deadline. Dallas, I think, has got – they're too top-heavy. I think you would agree that they need some scoring, some depth scoring.
Well, yeah, that's why we've been talking about Rick Nash here for the last, what, 2, 3 weeks, maybe even a month. And, you know, you put Rick Nash alongside Jason Spezza there on your second line, and I don't care what anybody says. I mean, Rick Nash is maybe not a 40-goal scorer anymore, but he's still a 30-goal scorer, and, you know, you add him to the mix there if you're the Dallas Stars, because you're competing against Nashville. You're competing against Winnipeg, Minnesota in that Central Division. So when you see Nashville go out and acquire Kyle Turris, and you see Winnipeg hot on the heels of a Derek Brassard, obviously they didn't get him, but the point is other teams in their division are loading up here. Mm-hmm. So if it isn't Rick Nash, I think the Dallas Stars are going to bring in a top six forward, because that's what they really need. Maybe they bring in a depth defenseman. As far as the Minnesota Wild go, Drew, I mean, I wouldn't expect tons of moves. The Minnesota Wild have quietly had a pretty good season there, and you know, maybe they bring in a depth defenseman. Maybe they go after a third line center. They've had Joel Eriksson Ek playing third line center. We know Staal and Koivu are entrenched there as number one and number two center. So I could see the Wild making a few moves, but I don't necessarily know they'd be in on Mike Hoffman or Rick Nash or some of those bigger names. Evander Kane's another guy that we haven't really talked about a lot today. It seems like Evander Kane has moved down that trade bait board, but, you know, Jason Zucker, Mikael Granlund, Zach Parise, Charlie Coyle, Tyler Ennis is on your third line right now. I realize Ennis hasn't had a great season. He's been on that third line with Nino Niederreiter, and we mentioned Eriksson Ek. So, I mean, there's a lot of talent on this Minnesota Wild roster, so I don't know if they go after an Evander Kane or Rick Nash, but for me it's probably going to be depth moves for them.
Quickly, the Colorado Avalanche, they've sort of fallen a little bit out of the playoff race. They're still on the fringes of it. They have Blake Como as an unrestricted free agent. Do you see any market for Blake Como on Monday?
Well, what do you do if you're the Avalanche, right? Like, you're still in the playoff race.
Yeah, but I think you're just happy to be competitive this year.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So I don't think they're buyers.
No, I don't think they're buyers
And I don't think
either.
They're sellers either, right? So sure, maybe Blake Como gets moved here. I have no idea, but I don't see the Avalanche being very active. I mean, we knew at the beginning of the season they were a young team, mm-hmm. and players like Tyson Jost and JT Compher and now Samuel Girard are getting an opportunity to play full-time in the NHL, so I don't necessarily see the Avalanche making big moves here.
When we come back, Adam Vingan of the Tennessean newspaper in Nashville is going to join us. Going to talk to him about the Predators ahead of Monday's NHL trade deadline. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day on TSN Radio 1290. Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Tennessean newspaper in Nashville, we're glad to welcome back to the program Adam Vingan. Adam, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
No, thank you for having me.
Adam obviously brought you on to talk about the Predators. We're about 48 hours away from the trade deadline, and that's really the focus of our program in this latter half of the program, of course. The Jets and the Predators battling it out for a top spot in the Central Division. Do you expect the Predators to be busy ahead of Monday's trade deadline? And if so, do they need to be busy?
Well, I certainly expect them to have, you know, their hands in as many potential deals as they can find, just because at this time of the year, especially, you can never count out David Poyle in terms of making a potential trade. I personally am unconvinced that they need to do anything. And here's the thing that I keep on bringing up whenever I'm asked about the Predators and their trade deadline plan. Think less of what the Predators are looking for and more about what they have to offer. You know, they do have their first-round draft pick this year, which projects to be near the bottom of the draft order, considering that they're expected to go far again in the Stanley Cup playoffs. That's not particularly as enticing as first-rounders go. Ellie Tolvanen, their top prospect, who just had 9 points in 5 games at the Olympics, which is the second most by an under-19 player in Olympic history, he's untouchable. The Predators have no interest in trading him. They are on the record as saying that they have no interest in trading him, especially not for a rental player. But they see him as a potential add once his KHL season is over. So teams asking for him are not getting very far. Dante Fabbro, their top defensive prospect, who's playing at Boston University, I think is probably maybe not as untouchable as Ellie Tolvanen, but probably still in that realm as well. So when you think about what they gave up as part of the three-team trade with Ottawa and Colorado in November that involved Kyle Turris coming to Nashville, they gave away their most NHL-ready defensive prospect, Sam Girard, their most NHL-ready forward prospect, Vladislav Kamenev, and a second-round pick for this year's draft. They don't really have much to give. If their first-round pick isn't enticing, and Tolvanen and Fabbro are not going anywhere, they really don't have anything left to offer teams that have these high-end scoring wingers that they may be looking at. So I don't think it's necessarily an issue of what they may be after. I just don't think they have what it takes to get them based on what they realistically could offer.
Adam, you just mentioned Ellie Tolvanen, and his performance at the Olympics for Team Finland was really impressive, and he's also had a great first year in the Finnish Elite League. How early could we see Ellie Tolvanen in the Predators lineup, and sticking with other players returning to the lineup, Mike Fisher, how early could we see Fisher back in the Preds lineup?
To answer your first question, as soon as Tolvanen's KHL season is over, Team Jokerit in Helsinki, Finland is, I believe, in third place now in the Western Conference in the KHL. They'll make the playoffs. Based on the scheduling, if his team were to get swept out of the first round of the playoffs, if his team makes it to Game 7 of the championship round in the KHL, it could be late April. So anywhere between early March and late April would be available. I mean, it's not as though there's a lot of negotiating that's required. He's going to sign a 3-year entry-level contract worth a maximum salary of $925,000 plus potential bonuses. So it's not as if they really have to hammer out a contract. It's going to be sitting there ready for him to sign when he's ready. So it could be as early as in the next couple of weeks, depending on how far his team goes. As for Mike Fisher, I think it's going to happen next week. I don't know if you're going to see him in Winnipeg on Tuesday, but I think you may see him in the following game in Edmonton next Thursday. I really do think that they're targeting next week as the potential return of Mike Fisher.
Adam Vingan is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Nashville Predators ahead of the NHL trade deadline coming up on Monday. You know, Adam, we were talking about the Predators last season. They made it all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. They did so without Kevin Fiala. They did so with an injured Ryan Johansson. You know, how much, you know, does David Poile sit back and say, had we had those two players healthy in our lineup, we, you know, maybe could have defeated the Pittsburgh Penguins, and that factors into his thinking about and into his plans regarding Monday's trade deadline?
Well, of course, you think about game one of the Stanley Cup final, the top six centers for the Nashville Predators were Colin Sissons and Mike Fisher. Now you have Ryan Johansson, presumably, as long as he stays healthy. You have Kyle Turris, you have Nick Bonino, who's on the other side, you have Mike Fisher, you have Kevin Fiala healthy. They're in a good spot. I know a lot of Predators fans were looking at what happened last night, that three-team trade that took forever to accomplish, but it ultimately did in the game of Pittsburgh Penguins, Derek Brassard. Now you look at their top three centers with Crosby, Malkin, and Brassard. I mean, they're better than they were last year when you include Riley Shea in there instead of Matt Cullen. They're better 1-2-3-4 Pittsburgh. I think a lot of Predators fans were looking at that and thinking, what is our team going to do? I see players out there that could help the Predators. I mean, I think Rick Nash on paper provides a lot of those things. I think Evander Kane does as well. But the Predators are interested really in either players that are expiring contracts or have 1 year left on their contract. I don't think they're wanting to make any long-term commitments. I know there was some hearsay last week about Tomas Tatar, but he's got 3 years left on his contract after this one. I'm not sure if that really fits what the Predators are looking for. But I look at this Predators lineup now, Kyle Turris was a big add. He's been great for them overall. He's really helped balance out the line. I'm not convinced the Predators really need to do anything else. That's just my personal opinion, of course. But I look at the lineup now at full strength, and I don't necessarily see a need to alienate players on that roster by bringing in somebody else.
Yeah, by the way, Adam, are you okay? Because it sounds like you're maybe in the middle of a bit of a windstorm there.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's I'm outside of Nashville. It's warm, but it looks like it's going to start pouring soon, so it's that calm before the storm. It's a little windy. I apologize.
That's quite okay. I hope you get inside before the rain starts to happen.
Yeah, Adam, we've just got a few more questions for you here, and we appreciate you coming on, as always. I wanted to go back a couple of weeks to the game in Montreal between the Predators and the Habs. What did you make of that back and forth between P.K. Subban and Brendan Gallagher?
What I made of that was that is the closest thing to an admission from the Montreal Canadiens that we've received about why they've traded away P.K. Subban since that trade happened. You heard the rumors about this, you know, discord in the locker room and him being, you know, all for himself and not necessarily being a team player. You heard all of those things, and Mark Bergevin didn't necessarily dampen those flames when he spoke after the trade. You know, I remember saying that, you know, PK is different, we know that, blah, 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 blah. That's the closest thing to an admission that we've gotten about why the Canadians felt the need to trade PK Subban since that trade happened. I didn't necessarily cover it a lot from my perspective, because quite frankly, it didn't really have much effect on the Nashville Predators, but it certainly was a big story. Those two were going at it not only in the game of Montreal, but in the game of Nashville, too. I mean, Brendan Gallagher is the quintessential player you love to have on your team, but you hate him when he's on the other team. And there was definitely a good back and forth there, but frustration certainly played into it. You could hear it in Brendan's comments. He didn't understand why he was being asked about P.K. Subban, but felt like P.K. came into town and made it all about P.K. Subban. One thing that was interesting to me, he made a visit to the hospital the day before the game. The Predators had the day off in Montreal, and he and about six of his teammates, including Roman Josi and Ryan Johansson, Scott Hartnell, Matt Irwin, I believe Anthony Boteto as well, went to the hospital to visit the kids. None of his Canadian teammates did that, as far as I know. And maybe that tweet that he sent out, how great the teammates are to come with me to the hospital, maybe he was subtweeting. How the kids are these days. But like I said, I really do think that it was just a matter of that was the closest thing we've heard from the Canadians as to why they traded him since they traded him.
Adam Vingan covers the Nashville Predators for the Tennessean newspaper in Nashville. Adam, we'll see you on Tuesday night here in Winnipeg. It ought to be a great Central Division matchup against the top two teams in the Central Division.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that game. We'll see you guys there. Thanks.
See you Tuesday, Adam. Thanks
yeah,
very
stay
much.
Stay inside.
Yeah, get inside before the rainstorm happens. There you go. He got inside, I think. Adam's done with us is what it basically boils down to. When we come back, we'll look at the Pacific Division. Trade deadline preview show continues. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Pacific Division, where the Vegas Golden Knights got in on a trade last night. Let's just go through the trade, because we've talked about it, you know, for a lot of the show. And it's one of the more complicated trades you're actually ever going to see in the NHL. It's actually three trades. Not just one, but it's three trades. The Vegas Golden Knights trade Tobias Lindbergh to the Ottawa Senators. If you haven't heard of Tobias Lindbergh, you're excused for that. In exchange, the Golden Knights get Derek Brassard, Vincent Dunn, and a 2018 third-round pick. The Golden Knights then trade Derek Brassard, Vincent Dunn, and a third-round pick to the Pittsburgh Penguins in exchange for Ryan Reeves and a 2018 fourth-round pick. The Golden Knights also retain 40% of Derek Brassard's salary. That's the big key function in the whole deal, is that they use their salary cap space and hold on to Brassard's contract. The Ottawa Senators then trade Tobias Lindbergh, who they acquired from the Vegas Golden Knights. They trade him to the Pittsburgh Penguins in exchange for defenseman Ian Cole, Swedish goaltender Filip Gustafsson, who of course backstopped the Swedes to a silver medal at the World Junior Hockey Championship, a 2018 first-round pick, and a 2019 third-round pick. So all in all, Brassard goes to Pittsburgh as the big package. Vegas Golden Knights get Ryan Reeves and a fourth-round pick for their troubles and for their cap space. And the Ottawa Senators end up with Ian Cole, Filip Gustafsson, a 2018 first-round pick, and a 2019 third-round pick. And the expectation, of course, is that Ian Cole will be traded between now and Monday because he's on an expiring contract.
Yeah, and the Penguins have been trying to move Ian Cole for quite some time now. Yeah. He obviously used to be a defenseman for the St. Louis Blues as well, more of a depth defenseman at this point in his career. But, you know, I think the Ottawa Senators did pretty well there. And I realize this is a Pacific Division segment, Drew, yeah. But, you know, considering that, you know, they're rebuilding right now, you know, they get Filip Gustafsson. He's kind of your goalie of the future, right? We know that Craig Anderson is towards the end of his career. You get a first-round pick, and we know that the Senators are not done, and then the Golden Knights retain salary, and they get a draft pick and Ryan Reeves, and Ryan Reeves will most likely be a fourth-liner for the Golden Knights. It gives them some more toughness, and you know, we thought at the beginning of this season when we were talking about the Golden Knights, first of all, most people did not think they were going to be a playoff team.
Well, everybody thought they'd be selling. They'd be one of the teams we'd be talking about as one of the big sellers on
right.
the trade deadline day.
And so you thought, you know, players like James Neal, who's a pending UFA, Mikhail Grabowski, who hasn't played this year for the Golden Knights, he's a pending UFA. Mm-hmm. David Perron is a pending UFA. You thought that the Golden Knights would be moving these players at the deadline, and there's absolutely no way that they move Perron or Neal. Grabowski, I don't think there's much of a market for him at this point in his career, but James Neal's injured right now, and I don't think it's going to be long-term. I think he's going to be back in the lineup in the next week or so here. But the Golden Knights are an interesting case, Drew. They're at the top of the Pacific Division right now, and they're definitely not sellers, so are they buyers? I don't know. Yeah. They've been playing so well that, you know, you wonder if they need to make that many moves. I mean, for me, it's probably going to be on the back end. And, you know, if they are going to acquire a forward, I don't know if they're going to be in on Rick Nash or Mike Hoffman or Evander Kane. I mean, Evander Kane probably makes the most sense. You know, we know that he has the connections to Vegas, and maybe you rent him, or maybe you even sign him after the season is over. But I don't know that they're going to be one of the more active teams. I'm not saying that they won't acquire a player. Yeah. I mean, I can't look into a crystal ball and tell you who the Golden Knights are going to acquire. But just the fact that they're buyers is incredible. But again, when you consider how well they've been playing, I mean, they really haven't had that many hiccups this year. No. They've been atop the Pacific Division for the majority of the season. So maybe you bring in, you know, a left side defenseman there, you know, to upgrade what you have there. You know, you've got players like Nate Schmidt and Braden McNabb, but you can always maybe add, you know, a third pairing left shot defenseman. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, maybe they add one or two pieces, but I don't think they're necessarily going to be after those big name free agents.
What about the other teams that are currently holding
pending
down...
Pending free agents.
Yeah, pending UFAs. The other teams that are holding down playoff spots in the Pacific Division, namely right now the San Jose Sharks and the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. We heard earlier today that Joel Ward is going to provide the Sharks with a list of teams that he's that he'll be willing to be moved to. So it sounds like San Jose is shopping Joel Ward ahead of the deadline.
Ward has not had a good season this year, Drew, and it hasn't worked out for him. Joel Ward's had an excellent NHL career, but at this point in his career, I mean, he's really only going to provide you kind of with that, you know, fourth line role for a team. So if I don't think they're getting much back for Joel Ward.
If you're the Anaheim Ducks, though, and you're clearly a team that's in a win now mode in Anaheim, and you've got really some of the best center depth in the entire NHL when you go up the middle with Getzlaff and Kessler and Henrique and Vermette, if you're the Anaheim Ducks, aren't you looking to shore up your offense ahead of Monday, maybe with a guy like Evander Kane, now that the Ducks have, you know, scratched and clawed all season long to get into a playoff spot? They've battled through the injury bug. They've battled through Ryan Kessler being out for a majority of the year. They're now in a playoff spot, and to me, I don't want to play the Anaheim Ducks in the playoffs.
I don't think anybody wants to play the Anaheim Ducks, and that's because you've got Ryan Getzlaff, Ryan Kessler, and Adam Henrique up the middle. Yeah. They've already made their moves up the middle, Drew. Mm-hmm. The Anaheim Ducks are not going after a third-line center, a fourth-line center. They've got that in Adam Henrique, and they've got that in Antoine Vermette. So you're right. I think they're trying to acquire a winger to kind of supplement the players they already have there. And Rickard Rakell's having another great year. Mm-hmm. We know how good the Anaheim Ducks are. And, you know, it's not a guarantee that they're going to make the playoffs, but they're obviously going to make a push. And, you know, so Evander Kane, does he make sense there? I mean, the Ducks are a heavy team. There aren't that many teams that play that heavy game anymore. Mm-hmm. And the Ducks are one of them. Calgary's another team that plays a heavy game. They're a very physical team with guys like Michael Ferland and Matthew Tkachuk and Troy Brower, but the Ducks are kind of that old school team, right? You've got Getzlaff and Perry there. Kessler is a guy that, you know, he's an agitator. He's a physical player. You've got guys like Kevin Bieksa on the back end. Josh Manson is a physical defenseman. So Evander Kane fits right in there. I have no idea
if that's
a fit, but it could happen.
If you're the Ducks, you can even take a guy on who's got some salary for and some term on his contracts. You look at their salary situation for next year. Well, right now they're going to have about almost $12 million in cap space for next year, and they got, you know, guys like Kevin Bieksa coming off the books. He's got a $4 million cap hit.
Yep.
He's coming off the books, and he's not going to get that.
How about
course.
This, Drew?
Yeah.
I mean, Evander Kane could easily be a third-line player on a team like the Ducks, but imagine if that first line is Evander Kane, Ryan Getzlaff, and Corey Perry.
That might be
the scariest line in the league as far as physically intimidating goes, and Rickard Rakell has been on that line as well, but we know that Randy Carlyle doesn't have any problems moving guys up and down those lines, so, you know, the Ducks are an interesting team. I don't know. They might stay quiet, but knowing what Bob Murray has done in the past, I wouldn't expect them to be completely quiet.
I think they're your sleeper team. I mean, they're the team that I'm watching the closest, ahead of Monday. I think the Anaheim Ducks are a team that can say, look, we've been lurking in the Western Conference all season long. We've been lurking in the Pacific Division. We think we are good enough, you know, in goal, on the back end, and maybe we just add another winger, and that potentially could put them over the top. You know how close they were last year to making the Stanley Cup Finals, going to, was it Game 7 against Nashville?
Yep.
So, you know, there's no reason why I don't think why Anaheim's saying, why aren't we a Stanley Cup contender in the Western Conference?
Yeah, you mentioned the Sharks earlier. We know that the LA Kings, they've already made their moves.
Yeah.
They brought Dion Phaneuf in. They brought Toby Reeder in. They're probably done as far as trades go, I would imagine. Who knows? Maybe they have another trick up their sleeves, Rob Blake and company there. But for me, the Sharks are an interesting team as well because, you know, you look at the Sharks and you know that they have, you know, the same kind of core that they've had over the last few years, Patrick Marleau being the only player that really isn't there this year.
Joe Thornton injured right now, of course.
Right, and he'll be back for the playoffs if they end up making the playoffs, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Sharks go after one of these wingers, whether that's Mike Hoffman or Rick Nash or Evander Kane, especially if it's going to be a rental. I mean, Nash and Kane would be the rentals. Hoffman, we talked about, he's got a couple of years left on his contract, or is mm-hmm. it 1 year? 1 or 2 years left on his contract, but, you know, they've had some trouble scoring goals at times this year. So, you know, you wonder, you know, Joe Pavelski, you know, has struggled offensively. You wonder if they bring someone in there, wouldn't be surprised because you know that the Sharks have to make the playoffs this year. I mean, this isn't a team that's going to accept missing the playoffs.
No, but the thing about the Sharks, the difference between, let's say, the Sharks and the Anaheim Ducks, from my perspective, is, you know, when the Ducks fully healthy, they're a Stanley Cup contender. The San Jose Sharks, I don't think, are. I know that they've been in a playoff spot, and they've been in a playoff spot for the majority of the season.
The Sharks, by the way, right now are only 1 point up on the Ducks for second in the Pacific.
I know. I just don't see the Sharks, even at full health, as a real contender, whereas I see the Ducks definitely as a contender.
I don't know about that, Drew. I mean, I agree. I think the Ducks are a better team. Yeah. But if you get the goaltending, and Martin Jones has had a pretty good year, if you get that goaltending, and we know Brent Burns, Mark Edward Vlasic, I mean, they're great defensemen. Mm-hmm. I even like Brendan Dillon there as a second pairing defenseman. I wouldn't count the Sharks out completely. Look, I think the Predators are a better team than the Sharks. I think the Jets are a better team than the Sharks. I just said the Ducks, I think, are a better team than the Sharks. But I wouldn't count them out. You know, you look at what they did a couple of years ago going all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. I wouldn't count them out, even though they might not be a top team in the West right now.
Should make note there was a minor trade in the Pacific Division earlier today. Edmonton Oilers send defenseman Brandon Davidson to the New York Islanders in exchange for a third-round draft pick. So Davidson out of Edmonton. The Oilers, of course, going to be sellers ahead of the deadline. You've heard names Patrick Maroon. You've heard Mark Letestu. Two guys maybe linked to the Winnipeg Jets, or rumored had been that they'd been linked to the Winnipeg Jets. The Oilers, they have the for sale sign on the door in the Pacific Division. They trade Brandon Davidson earlier today to the New York Islanders for a third round pick.
Yeah, Mark Letestu is an interesting one. He's been a bit of a Jets killer over the last couple of years, especially last year. And you wonder maybe if a team like the Sharks or the Vegas Golden Knights is interested in acquiring Letestu, maybe they would prefer to move Letestu to an Eastern Conference team. Mm-hmm. But as far as I'm concerned, he'd look really good on a lot of teams as a fourth-line center.
Letestu, of course, a UFA at season's end. Same with Patrick Maroon. Maroon, I could also see going back to Anaheim, a guy who's familiar with the Ducks organization. Yep. Would certainly sit.
I still think he makes a lot of sense on the Jets, too. And I realize a lot of people are saying, you know, he's slow and all that. But not everybody on the team is going to be as fast as Nikolaj Ehlers. I mean, like, you are going to have some players that are a little bit slower, but as far as I'm concerned, what he brings in physicality, he's got great hands. He had 27 goals, and you can say whatever you want. You can say that he was playing with Connor McDavid. You can say he was playing with a lot of other skilled players, but the reality is he is a goal scorer, and he does have that power forward element. And I'm not saying that the Jets should give up the farm to acquire him, but I think it makes a lot of sense for the Jets or any other team that wants to get him.
Two other teams in the Pacific Division that are clearly out of it, the Vancouver Canucks and the Arizona Coyotes.
Yeah, the Canucks are going to move Thomas Vanek. They're going to move whoever they can.
Ben Hutton also potentially talked about as you know, potentially being on the move. At least he's on TSN's trade bait board. I'm not sure what's going to happen there. He's making $2.8 million, and he's got a year left on his contract.
How many times, by the way, Drew, has Vanek been moved prior to the trade deadline?
Every year.
10 times?
Well, he keeps getting one-year deals, and so he gets traded at the deadline every year. And, you know, he gets traded for a fourth or a fifth round pick, and then he disappoints whatever team acquires him. And, like, clockwork, where, you know, the thing happens every year. It's, you can set your clock to it. Max Domi, though, as we talked about him briefly in terms of how he would fit with the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, and I was taking some heat. I mean, Max Domi, yes, he has played the majority of his NHL career and junior career on the wing, but he has also played center for the Coyotes this year. So, yes, he's not a natural center, but the reality is, guys, well, I guess it's just you, but Rory's in the studio, too, because Dave has left.
Dave's gone.
But
dead weight out.
Blake Wheeler played center earlier this season. I'm not saying Blake Wheeler is going to go back to center, but I'm saying Andrew Kopp, he's a guy that's played wing. He's moved to center. I'm just saying there always is the chance the Jets would look at using him as a center. And if he doesn't play center, he'd play wing. So Max Domi, I mean, we could talk about this for 20 minutes. There's a lot of reasons why Max Domi makes sense on the Jets. Is it going to happen? I have no idea.
Let me ask you this, though, from the flip side. The Arizona Coyotes are a team devoid of talent. They're a team devoid of skill. They have a 22-year-old former first-round pick in Max Domi. They earlier this year, you know, traded Anthony Duclair, who, of course, they acquired from the New York Rangers. Why would the Coyotes trade? Why would they sell low on a young player like Max Domi?
I don't think they're going to sell low. I think the asking price is going to be high, Drew.
But if you're the Coyotes, don't you want to see what you have in Domi surrounded by better talent?
Well, I guess my answer to that would be is, you know, they have players like Dylan Strome, you know, coming up through the system. I think, you know, at this point, everything is on the table. If they get the right return for Max Domi, I think John Chyka has to be listening on all players. I think Clayton Keller's untouchable. Jacob Chychrun is probably untouchable. What about a defenseman that we haven't talked about in a long time, Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
Well, he's got 1 year left on his deal. He's in the same boat as Erik Karlsson is. If you're Oliver Ekman-Larsson, unless you love living in Arizona, and I get why you would love living in Arizona.
Beautiful state.
Why are you, or I'm just, better weather is what I would say, but why would you be signed with the Arizona Coyotes?
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, as you said, I mean, he could really like it there, and he's played his entire career there. He's still a young defenseman. But right. My point is, if you're John Chyka, why are you not listening? And by the way, I think he's
Nicholas Jalmerson also?
Well, and Nicholas Jalmerson, I think he has 1 more year left on his contract or 2 more years left on his contract.
After this year.
And Ken Wiebe talked about him last night on the broadcast. Maybe the Jets would look at bringing in Nicholas Jalmerson. Hey, I think everything's on the table. By the way, Chevy has the familiarity with Jalmerson in Chicago, right? Yeah. So, I mean, I could see that happening. It's really tough to say what is going to happen because I think the Jets right now are pretty good on defense. I don't know if they need to bring in a left side defenseman, especially, you know, when Dmitry Kulikov moves back to the left side.
Sure.
And then you've got Morrissey, Kulikov, and Enstrom as your three top left pair defensemen.
Bufflin, Trouba, Myers on the right side, you know, when right. Trouba's back healthy.
So who knows, you know, if the Jets would look at bringing in a Jalmerson. So, but the Coyotes, I think, have to be entertaining everything because they're one of the worst teams in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you have to start thinking about where you're going from now because the scary thing is similar
Houston.
To the Canucks.
Houston is where they're going.
Well, I are the Coyotes going to be any better next year?
No, probably not. But they might be better in Houston once they get to Houston.
So if you're not going to be any better next year, then you really have to start looking at, you know, stockpiling draft picks.
When we come back, we'll shift our focus to the Atlantic Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our trade deadline preview show as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN Radio. 1290.
The skepticism is fading. I think many of us believe that it was far more likely that Pierre Dorion and the Ottawa Senators would consider trading their captain Erik Karlsson in the offseason when more clubs had flexibility. But there's been enough interest developed in the possibility of that trade that I think the Ottawa Senators have had to take a step back to say, okay, maybe it would be cleaner to make this move now or between now and Monday. Again, not to say that Erik Karlsson is going to be traded, but I think that there's at least a 50-50 chance of the possibility of this happening.
With Mr. Ginsburg, the question for you as we welcome you back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290 as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day. The question for you, Mr. Ginsburg, is Erik Karlsson a member of the Ottawa Senators on Monday at 6 o'clock Central Time?
Drew, I'm going to not answer your question, and I'm going to ask you a question.
That's not how the show works.
If I would have told you last June,
yeah,
after the Ottawa Senators made it all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals, yeah, almost beat the Pittsburgh Penguins to get to the Stanley Cup Finals, if I would have told you that 10 months later,
yeah,
the Ottawa Senators were going to be considering trading Erik Karlsson and the Vegas Golden Knights would be first place in the entire NHL, what would you have said?
I would have said you're probably drinking heavily again and we should probably get that looked after.
Well, and that is, you know, something
usually
that I should
case.
Look
yeah,
after. But, I mean, the Karlsson, you know, trade speculation, again, we talked about this, what was it, a month ago, a month and a half ago on a Legal Curve. And, you know, I said, you know, I didn't think that Karlsson was going to be traded. But, you know, you hear the TSN insiders talk about this. And it looks like the Tampa Bay Lightning are very interested in Karlsson. And by the way, if the Tampa Bay Lightning have Karlsson and Hedman as your 1-2 defensemen,
yeah,
it's over.
Just give them the cup.
Well, I mean, those are both Norris Trophy candidates right there.
Sure.
Those are top five defensemen in the league.
Do you trade Sergachev for Erik Karlsson as part of a deal?
Well, I mean, they just acquired Sergachev last year for Jonathan Drouin, but I don't know, what do you have to give up to get Erik Karlsson? I have no idea. I mean, it looks like Erik Karlsson and Ottawa are on completely different pages. They might be in different books. I don't know, but it looks like Carlson's future in Ottawa is very short right now. Mm-hmm. He's got 1 year left on his contract, and when his contract does expire, I mean, pick a number, Drew. Is he going to be a $10 million defenseman? Is he going to be an $11 million defenseman? You look at what he did in the playoffs last year. He was a point-per-game player. Everybody remembers that pass that he made.
Yeah.
Only Erik Karlsson can make that pass. I don't even think like Brent Burns or Victor Hedman can make that pass. This guy has all the talent in the world, and he's only 27 years old. He could play another 10 or 11 years in the NHL. So if you're trading Erik Karlsson, you're screwed. You're not going to be a good team for 3 or 4 years.
If the Ottawa Senators are trading Erik Karlsson, and I think you have to, by the way, I think you have to trade Erik Karlsson because...
But do you have to trade him right now?
Well, I don't know if you have to trade him now. You have to trade him in the summer because he's not re-signing with the Senators.
But don't you get more for him next year if you trade him?
No, I think you get more now for him because you get him for, as we've talked about, or two playoff runs as opposed to just one. And by the way, if you're the Senators, you can't include the Bobby Ryan contract because that's going to diminish what you get in return for Erik Karlsson.
Sorry, not next year, as in during the regular season. That's not what
you
meant.
I meant
prior to the draft.
Yeah, well, I don't think you get more for him prior to the draft, but I think you get, if you don't trade him now, then I think you trade him prior to the draft. But if you're the Ottawa Senators, I mean, what's your plan for your franchise? If you're trading,
that's a good question. Why don't we ask Eugene Melnyk? Hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
I mean, you're being tongue in cheek, but I have to say, if you're the Ottawa Senators and you're trading Erik Karlsson, and maybe you're trading Mike Hoffman.
Are they going to trade their whole team?
I think you have to trade your owner. I think that's your number one hindrance right now is that Eugene Melnyk, nobody wants to come to Ottawa to play for the Senators. Your owner is...
Has an owner ever been traded in a pro sports league?
I don't think you can trade an owner. But if you're Eugene Melnyk, I mean, you have to look at selling the franchise. Otherwise, your franchise is going down the tubes. Nobody likes you in Ottawa because you've torpedoed your entire fan base with your comments prior to the Heritage Classic.
I feel a Drew rant coming.
Well, it's not a rant. It's just fact of the matter is you are an owner who shoots from the hip, and he's always been a bit of a wild card, and that's fine until you start antagonizing your players. And that's what he's been doing. He's been antagonizing his players. He's been antagonizing his fan base. And when your fan base hates the owner... And the players hate the owner. That means the fan base won't support the team financially. The players don't want to play in Ottawa. So you're Eugene Melnyk. You have to put the for sale sign up on your team. I'm sure the NHL head office is sitting back and saying, well, this is an unmitigated disaster. We can't have Eugene Melnyk running this Ottawa Senators team into the ground.
You know, if you're the Tampa Bay Lightning right now, and, you know, we've heard names thrown out there. We've heard Mikhail Sergachev. We've heard Braden Point. We've heard first-round picks, maybe a first- and second-round pick to get Erik Karlsson. If you're the Tampa Bay Lightning and you're where you are in the standings right now, first place in the Eastern Conference, do you want to trade Sergachev and Braden Point? I don't know if you want to upset that cart.
Well, you know, I don't know if I include both. Braden Point has proven to be such a... revelation as a centerman for the Tampa Bay Lightning.
It's been fantastic.
Yeah, that I don't know if you can include both Sergachev and Braden Point.
Well, they're not giving up Erik Karlsson for Sergachev and a first-rounder.
You're right. They're not. So maybe
This is one of the best defensemen in the league.
Yeah. Well, then maybe Tampa Bay. But if you're the Ottawa Senators, do you do it maybe for multiple first-rounders this year's and next year's or this year and the next
years? It's going to be a late first-rounder.
Right. I don't think there's a ton of value there. I think you've got to take – if you're the Senators, you're asking for players off the roster, namely Point and Sergachev. And if you're the Tampa Bay Lightning, you're saying, well, Erik Karlsson helps our team, but we're probably already a Stanley Cup contender. Does he guarantee us a Stanley Cup? And the answer is no, so you don't make that trade right now.
He makes you very dangerous, though.
But they're already dangerous.
I mean, imagine if Erik Karlsson and Victor Hedman – or on the ice for the whole game, right? Because you'd have probably separate them.
Yeah.
And then you'd have Hedman on for half of the game and you'd have Karlsson on for
half
of the
game. So you're the Nashville Predators.
Well, no, I think your defense becomes better than the Predators.
Fine,
just because you have two of the best defensemen in the league.
Right. But, I mean, then it boils down to does it guarantee that you're good enough to beat the Tampa Bay the Pittsburgh Penguins in the conference finals?
No, I don't think you're guaranteed, but you're definitely better. But then again, you know, you're giving up
Sergachev,
who's been really good, and Braden Point's been really good. Again, I don't necessarily know that they'd have to give up both of those players. But if you're Pierre Dorion, you have to be asking for at least one of those two players.
Well, you have to, absolutely. You're asking for both of them. And I don't think that you're necessarily... I don't think that the Senators...
By the way, Victor Hedman's a left-shot defenseman and Karlsson's a right-shot defenseman, so you could pair those guys up together.
And when the situation calls for it, I suspect that John Cooper and Steve Yzerman would do that.
I just think they would be even more dangerous if they separated those two.
Let's move away from the Ottawa Senators because, I mean, everyone knows that they have the target on them and everyone knows they're open for business, and I don't know why Matt Duchene's name isn't also included in the conversation as we asked Jimmy Haskup
earlier. It's simple. It's just because they just acquired him.
So? He's leaving after next season.
Well, I know, but I mean, you tried to get better by acquiring Matt Duchene,
and it failed.
Then you know, two or three. Well, I mean, it failed in the short term, but you're hoping. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that they were going to re-sign him. No, they never said that they weren't going to re-sign him.
They probably wanted to re-sign him,
and they might still.
Well, no, Matt Duchene's not going to sign in Ottawa. Why would he?
Well, why would anybody sign anywhere?
Well, I don't think that people. I don't think that he would sign in Ottawa.
If they give him the right amount of money, Drew, you don't think he signs there?
Other teams will give him the same amount of money. The money's
well,
not
maybe
an issue.
Ottawa has to give him more then.
Well, I mean, unless they're going to give him $11 million, and another team's only going to give him $7 million. But even then, I mean, if you're...
Well,
if
then
you're,
that's a really bad trade if they gave up all of that just to have him for 1 year.
Well, I think that they didn't intend to have their year go to the tank. And then you couple it with the fact that your wild card owner has been shooting off his mouth and, you know, sabotaging the franchise in the eyes of the 31 other NHL teams.
It was a very short-sighted trade if they traded Turris, who signs a six-year deal with Nashville.
Yeah.
And then they acquire Duchesne, and then he's gone 1 year later.
I think, but again...
If they aren't going to re-sign him or he doesn't want to stay there, yeah, I agree with you. Then you have to move him.
Yeah, I don't know why anybody who's got options, and Matt Duchesne's got a lot of options because he hits unrestricted free agency.
He's
going to
get $7 million a year.
Yeah, for a seven-year deal. So is it that much? Is it worth that much more to get, you know, $9 million a year on an eight-year deal from Ottawa? I don't think so. If you're Matt Duchesne and all you want to do is win... I mean, if you want, you know, you could have stayed in Colorado for that, you know, for that amount of money or whatever, if you didn't really care about, you know, playing on a successful team. This Senators team, the Senators franchise, is at a precipice right now. This offseason.
Well, they're in a horrible situation.
Yeah, they're at a precipice where they either need to, they need a new owner, is I think their first and foremost, more than any trade that they could make in terms of on ice, is their owner is currently sabotaging the team. Now, is he doing it deliberately? No, he's not doing it deliberately, but he's too much of a loose cannon, and you don't win enough. George Steinbrenner could get away with being a loose cannon because he was the New York Yankees.
I don't think you can compare Steinbrenner.
Steinbrenner's a better owner than Eugene Melnyk.
Well, exactly.
Well, but I mean, I'm talking about owners who are loose cannons.
Yeah, but you're comparing the owner of the New York Yankees to the owner of the Ottawa Senators.
Take former Los Angeles Clippers owner Donald Sterling. Now, Eugene Melnyk, I'm not saying anything to do with the racism part of it whatsoever, but Donald Sterling was a loose cannon of an owner, and the Los Angeles Clippers were an absolute joke for all the years until he was removed as owner. Eugene Melnyk, the Senators haven't been a joke, but they're certainly aiming that way based on the actions of Melnyk this season in alienating Erik Karlsson, in alienating the fan base with no future in sight that's not going to... I mean, they have no prospects for future success right now, and that, to the fans of the Ottawa Senators, has to be the most disheartening thing. There's a GoFundMe page up right now, I believe, to get billboards out in Ottawa saying, Eugene Melnyk, you must sell the team. And when the fan base turns on an owner, that's the beginning of the end for a franchise. So the Senators really need to do something about the ownership situation in Ottawa.
Yeah, I agree. And it's just unfortunate because we talked about it at the top of the segment. The Ottawa Senators almost went all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. And if Pittsburgh ends up winning the Cup, maybe Ottawa wins the Cup last year.
Yeah.
So it's really unfortunate because they had such an incredible run last year. And this year, they're not making the playoffs, and it looks like everyone is on the table, including Erik Karlsson.
When we come back, we shift our focus to the Metropolitan Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets Game Day on TSN Radio 1290.
I mean, we try to keep it the same, but obviously it's a lot of thinking and what's going to happen and stuff. I think that's normal. No one wants to be in this situation, and it's sometimes it's hard, especially when you're losing, and then a lot of rumors and all that. So I think in about 6 days here, the mood is going to get a little bit better.
That's New York Rangers forward Matt Zuccarello, certainly sounding slightly unhappy with his lot in life, given the struggles of the New York Rangers this year. Zuccarello sort of been on the fringe of the conversation as part of people that might be available from the New York Rangers. We know Rick Nash has, of course, been talked about ad nauseum. We know that Michael Grabner went to the New Jersey Devils earlier this week in the first ever trade between the Rangers and the Devils.
Grabner really likes that New York State area, doesn't he?
No kidding. Well, if you don't have to actually move your family, that's the kind of trade that you can get on board with. Ryan McDonough, of course, he's rumored to be on the block, certainly would cost less than Erik Karlsson in a deal, so maybe he's a potential target for a lot of teams. You know, your thoughts on the New York Rangers, Ezzy? They certainly have the for sale sign up in New York. They've admitted to their fan base, we talked about it a few weeks ago, that all bets are off with the Rangers. They're selling and selling hard between now and Monday afternoon.
Yeah, Matt Zuccarello to me is an interesting one, and I remember talking to Jim Toth up in the press box about Matt Zuccarello. He thought he made a lot of sense on the Winnipeg Jets as either a third liner or second line winger, and he's got 1 year left at $4.5 million. So I think that's a very generous contract for a team who wants to acquire him. It's definitely generous for the Rangers. I think, you know, Zuccarello, you could argue, could probably be a $5 to $6 million a year player. So I think there's no doubt that Rick Nash is going to be traded, and we talked about it. There's always the chance that Nash comes back and plays again in New York. But whether it's Nashville or Dallas, I mean, whoever gets Nash is obviously going to get a big boost there. Ryan McDonagh, to me, is very interesting because, you know, as the captain of your team, and he's been the best defenseman there for how many years now? Many years, over 5 years. You know, Ryan McDonagh could add such a key element to a team, right? So if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, for example, they've been rumored to be after Ryan McDonagh, and you talk about the San Jose Sharks. Apparently they're interested in Erik Karlsson and Ryan McDonagh. So I think there's going to be a handful of teams. There might be as many as 10 teams interested in Ryan McDonagh. Maybe the Jets are interested in Ryan McDonagh. I have no idea. But, you know, for me, that's the bigger question because Nash is going to be traded. You mentioned Grabner's already gone. Zuccarello, maybe because he has 1 year left on his contract, he might get traded. But, wow, Ryan McDonagh, if you could add him into your top four, Drew, that would really help a team heading into the playoffs.
The Rangers are really the only team in the Metropolitan Division that's out of it, as the Islanders, Hurricanes, and Blue Jackets are sort of battling for that final wild card spot in the Eastern Conference. The Devils have a little bit more of a cushion.
I really want to hear what Michael Remus has to say,
though. Hi, Remus. What are you doing in here?
I thought we were talking about the Jets, guys. Come on. Big game day tonight. Santa Lucia Pizza game day.
I know. We've been talking about it all show. Apparently, you just like it was when you were sort of more of a member of a legal curve, you show up 2 hours and 45 minutes into the broadcast.
Well, that's why I asked Remo to come into the studio. I mean, he was one of the original members of a legal curve. I thought he'd want to come in and talk some hockey.
No, he's big-timing us now.
Are we going to talk about Canada winning bronze at the Olympics?
We did at the 115 segment.
Okay, for everyone listening who wants to go listen to the podcast, it's available. How pumped were they? They were more excited about that bronze medal than the 2014 team was pumped about their gold medal.
And did you see Derek Roy? Ream had to change his jersey.
Big fan of Derek Roy.
Because he had a little blood on his jersey, and then so he had to put on number 75, and there was no name bar. So it was really nice for a veteran like him to get that bronze.
And, yeah.
And we know that Canada really wanted gold, but at least they don't leave South Korea empty-handed.
Exactly. I mean, for these guys, it's a highlight of their career. You know, in 2014, I just felt like, you know, the millionaire NHL players had zero reaction to win a gold. They barely even celebrated. It was like another day.
Yeah, that gold medal game was pretty boring.
Well, it's because they knew they were the best team, and then they just took care of business.
Would they beat Finland or Sweden?
They beat Sweden,
because
they didn't have Backstrom.
That's right. Backstrom got held out because they thought he had doped before. Like, it took Sudafed an hour before
the game. The fact that I don't even remember who they played tells you what kind of game it was, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Let me ask you this. Josh Bailey signs a six-year contract extension with the New York Islanders yesterday.
Yep.
Gets $5 million a year. He's having a career season for the Islanders. What does the Bailey extension do for John Tavares? Do you think there's any correlation there? Does it make it more likely that Tavares sticks around, or is this just Josh Bailey sort of a late bloomer getting rewarded for having a career year?
I told you this before, Drew, on this show and off air. I don't think John Tavares is going anywhere. I think he's going to stay in New York. And you remember back to the Steven Stamkos sweepstakes. What did I say? He was going to stay in Tampa.
Sure.
Everybody thought he was going to go to Toronto or another team, and he stayed there. So I think there's a lot of similarities between a couple of years ago with Steven Stamkos and, you know, especially with, you know, the new arena announcement for Belmont Park. I mean, I don't think that the Islanders are going to let John Tavares go. And not only that, I think John Tavares wants to stay there.
You know, I think getting Bailey under contract is a good omen for the New York Islanders.
I don't necessarily know that that changes anything.
No? You think that?
I think he was already
in the
state. You
think Bailey's just a quality player that
we'll see.
Islanders want to re-sign?
Yeah.
Philadelphia, they go out, they need a goaltender, they get Peter Mrazek. That was either earlier this week or late last week at this point in time. The days are blending together.
They had to, Drew.
They
couldn't continue with Alex Lyon, and Alex Lyon is a great story.
Injuries and goal is the problem for the Flyers.
And, you know, Alex Lyon, a young goaltender who is their fourth-string goaltender. They've also got Anthony Stolarz in there, former member of the London Knights, but when you have your top two goalies, Brian Elliott and Michael Neuwirth, out of the lineup, I mean, they had to go out and acquire Mrazek. And the Flyers are a great story right now, by the way.
Nobody's talking
about
them.
They're third in the Metro Division right now. You know, when they didn't win, what was it, a 10-game winless streak earlier in the season, I remember we had Anthony Sanfilippo, good friend of the show, on the program, what was that, 3 months ago when the Jets played the Flyers. And, you know, they were in all types of trouble. And right now it looks like, you know, they're a good bet to make the playoffs.
Never mind a good bet to make the playoffs. They're only 2 points behind Pittsburgh for first overall in the Metropolitan Division, and they have a game in hand. So they're right in the thick of things with the Capitals and the Penguins. The Flyers undefeated in their last 10, 8-0-2. They go and get Mrazek. Mrazek has been pretty bad in Detroit the last little while. So
remember, fans wanted Dave Hextall fired?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
look where they are now.
Well, they certainly turned around their season, especially in this 8-0-2 stretch. Do you think Mrazek is a long-term answer? This is sort of similar to how the Flyers ended up with Steve Mason. Remember, they acquired Steve Mason from the Blue Jackets when he was a pending RFA. Mrazek, same thing. He's a pending RFA, although he has to be qualified at a very high number because he's making over $4 million this season. Are the Flyers looking at Mrazek as saying, well, we're going to give him an audition? It doesn't cost us a ton to acquire him, mainly a third-round pick, and then there's some conditions attached to that. And if he plays well for us, then maybe Mrazek, maybe we look at either qualifying him, maybe we look at signing him to a slightly lower cap hit, and he's our goaltender of the future, because there isn't somebody waiting in the wings in Philadelphia. They have Brian Elliott under contract for another season.
Yeah, and you know, we mentioned Anthony Stolarz, who I believe is 22, 23 years old right now. There's a good chance that if they like what Mrazek does here for the rest of the regular season in the playoffs, that they sign him. But that means someone has to be the odd man out, right? So is that Brian Elliott or is that Michael Neuwirth? I don't think they're going to go into next season with all three of those goaltenders.
It would be unlikely. But for the time being, the Flyers are sort of a team to watch. They've been under the radar as of late, certainly. And now they're only 2 points behind the Pittsburgh Penguins in the Metropolitan Division. That's it for this Saturday morning. Pardon me, Saturday afternoon here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to all of our guests, Adam Vingan of the Tennessean newspaper, Jimmy Haskup of USA Today, Mike Hyka of the Dallas Morning News, and Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press. In case you missed any of the program, it's available on tsn1290.ca, on our website, illegalcurve.com. Subscribe to it via wherever you get your podcast. Get it sent to your device each and every week. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey.
Big thanks to Remo.
Yeah, nice to have you in the studio for the last segment here, Remus.
Thanks for the Timbits.
You're welcome for the Timbits. Of course, Monday night, NHL trade deadline means NHL This Week, a special Monday edition. For producer Rory, for Remus, for Dave Minuke, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
As long as we stick together as a team, we'll be all right.